Those who want to assist Ruto and who are saying Ruto must stay, we wish them well. Thank you.
Okay, because we were saying that ODM said Ruto is not going anywhere. So
oh, he's not going.
Yeah, he's not going.
Oh my goodness. That's a new one. because the Gen Z's had said Ruto is going.
Yes, yes.
He was halfway to Sugoi, by the way.
Ekonene.
Yeah, ikiwa ni episode 340, tukisema like, subscribe, hit the notification button, tell a friend to tell a friend. Na leo tuko na muheshimiwa, and it's very interesting. Your name on, I've seen your name is Eugene Ludovich Wamalwa. And I'm assuming Ludovich is a Russian name.
You know, Africa, I never heard of that name.
Yeah.
Until, I'm a Catholic, so once you are baptized, you now go for confirmation before you receive the sacrament.
Okay.
So when I went, I was a little boy, when I went for confirmation in Kiminini, and my mother opened the Bible and came up with a name. Said, from today, you are going to be Ludovic. So where did that come from?
Okay.
Actually, I don't know if it's Russian or what, but
I
got it from my mama.
Okay.
I never heard of it myself. But it is my name now.
Yeah, because if it's Russian, then it's Ludovic, Russian, Serbian, those countries.
Yes, yes, yes.
But if it's Ludovic, then I'm guessing it's she had something else in mind. Eh?
Yes. But in Swahili, it sounds very quite different. Mutakatifu Ludovico.
Yeah. Okay. So I want us to talk about Kenyan politics, but before that, of course, one of the biggest headlines right now is what happened in Bangladesh, where the prime minister had to resign. She was 76 years old. There are a few people who are saying that Kenyans can push Ruto to that level. So what do you think about what happened in Bangladesh?
What happened in Bangladesh can happen anywhere. And it just goes back to confirming that power belongs to the people. And it's only donated to those who are in the executive or the judiciary or in the legislature. And the three most powerful words of our constitution are "we the people." And that is the opening, you know, a paragraph of our constitution, "we the people." So every time we forget that power belongs to the people, to that extent, are we closer to a Bangladesh.
Yeah.
So when these Gen Z's went in there, they killed quite a number. I think they're talking of 95, they're talking of 300.
Yeah.
But eventually, we saw them chilling in the prime minister's bed.
Yeah.
That can very easily happen when the Gen Z's entered our parliament on 25th of June. Wetangula never believed they can come and sit on his seat. But it happened. They can very easily find themselves in State House, chilling in Charlene's bed. It can happen. So I think it's just a reminder to us that we must not take the people for granted. We must always remember power belongs to the people. And every time we shut them out, and they have to now come and take back this power to themselves, what happened in Bangladesh can happen here. It happened in Sri Lanka. It happened in many other places. You remember the Arab Spring?
Yeah.
Mohamed Bouazizi was just a young Gen Z. He was 23 in Tunisia. And, you know, a college graduate who couldn't find a job. He was trying to make ends meet. He couldn't. Then he just bought a little petrol, doused it on himself. Then he lit up himself. People thought it was a joke. But it was the trigger of what became the Arab Spring. The young Tunisian, just the way young Kenyans are doing, and in Bangladesh, it can happen. So to me, it should make us think and not assume that we can maybe just do a political deal like we have done here in Kenya. Because these young fellows are not looking for deals. They're fighting for higher ideals. They're fighting to free Kenya from corruption, from tribalism, from impunity. So the ideals are higher than the deals that we have done today, accommodating each other in government, then ganging up against them as a political class. It's not going to work. Yes, because Nane Nane is coming, and you might not stop them. by sharing offices and ministries without addressing the real issues that took them to the streets.
Okay. But that also, the fact that you've mentioned Charlene has reminded me of also something else. There was the story that was going around this past weekend.
Yes.
It was the story about the matatu, and apparently a matatu belonging to the president's son.
Yes, George.
And just... the matatu being driven with impunity and not following any rules. Do you think that's possible? That in Kenya, maybe your son or your kid can just own and play by his own rules?
No, you know, these are some of the things that have caused the rage, because people get to a point and say, no, enough is enough. I mean, are we children of a lesser God? When we do things like this, it's the impunity that you see the Gen Z is fighting against. You also see double standards in the way we apply the law.
Yeah.
Under Article 27 of our Constitution, we are all equal before the law. And we're entitled to equal protection and benefit of the law. But when it looks like some people are above the law, and you have queued, you've come to, you know, the bus stop, you are waiting, there are 19 other vehicles ahead of you. Before you get there, you'll not get your bread. Then someone comes, reverses, takes the passengers away. How would you feel?
Yeah, yeah.
So this is the impunity that we are saying must be done away with. When you start demolishing houses, you go and demolish uko Mukuru kwa Njenga, Mukuru Kayaba, Mukuru kwa Ruben, you come and demolish here in the Gikomba, and you're saying there's a riparian land, you must move 30 meters away. But when you go to the suburbs, you go to Runda, the houses that were actually, you know, flooded are on riparian land. But because these wadosi, they are connected, they are politically correct, they don't suffer the same fate the people in Mathare suffered, the people in Gikomba suffered. So we are seeing, you know, Kenya becoming like an animal farm, Shambala Wanyama, where some animals are more equal than others. So this is the impunity that we must fight against, so that we bring back the culture of, you know, equality, the culture of accountability, and the culture of Kenyans being treated equally.
Oh, okay. Yes. But I didn't know that Runda was on riparian land. That's interesting to find out. Because I just thought that it was just the floods that were that bad.
Yes.
Okay. Shambala Wanyama.
There are some areas, you know. And instead of sending the bulldozers to pull the houses down, they send their trucks, kuchota maji kwa saidia. But in Mathare,
the
poor Kenyans were kicked out.
Okay.
Then they were given, was it 10K each?
Yeah, to go stand a life
somewhere. Some never even got the money. We don't even know where those families are now, because with 10K in the current economy, how long can a family last on that? Yes,
yeah. Maybe a week max.
Yeah.
And then also, talking of the George Ruto thing, it's also reminded me of a certain scandal that once there was a scandal around you, saying that you have a 19-year-old son and you're a deadbeat dad.
Yes.
And you know, right now on the internet, women don't love deadbeat dads.
Yes, I saw the guy, he's a Gen Z, and I don't want to get in trouble with Gen Z's. I support Gen Z's. So it's true, this rumor has been going around, and it's rather unfortunate, because it's something that had been brought to my attention, and I did meet the lady, I didn't meet the young man.
Oh, you
and
met them?
Yes, okay, it came up early in the year, and what we talked about was, you know, the issue of doing the DNA test, and I said, I had no problem, he's my son, I'll take him up. So the story that came out that my deadbeat dad have refused to pay fees for, it's not true.
Okay.
We never discussed that, and I think it's a matter that I am willing to sort out. Yes, I take responsibility. Where I come from, if you have children outside wedlock, they are your children. You treat them equally with the children in the home. So I don't have a problem with that.
No.
So it's not a scandal. It is something I'm ready to deal with. And so I'm so happy. I mean, I've been in public life for over 15 or 20 years.
Yeah.
I'm happy that I haven't been in a scandal. I'm hoping I will not be in one. Mm-hmm. I hope this will not be the first one. I'll deal with it.
Okay.
I'll own up.
Oh, okay.
I'll deal with it.
I'd say you've been in public for, is it the past 20 years? Was it, you came straight after your Kijana's death? Because we also need to talk about Kijana.
Yes.
The story has always been he was your father.
Yes.
But then the correction was he was your big brother. But I'm assuming you came into politics after his death, or what happened?
Yes, and our father died when we were very little kids. Mm. I think when he died, I was about 6.
Okay.
And by the time our big brother Mike came back, okay. Our father was still in politics. He was a senator, the first senator of Trans-Nzoia. So when he came in, he had to distinguish himself from Senator Wamalwa. That is how he called himself, Kijana Wamalwa Malo. Kijana, okay. Meaning ni Kijana ya Wamalwa.
Yeah.
And that's how the name came. And it became his brand.
Mm.
But soon after, you know, he came into politics in 1974.
Mm.
And then soon after, our father died in 1976.
Okay.
So
okay.
He now took over the leadership of the family.
Mm.
So he's the one who saw us through school. He's the one who saw us to college and in adult life.
Mm.
So he was really our father. We never really knew our father, the senator, because he died when we were very, very young.
Yeah.
And of course, a lot of people have tried to turn around and say, Wamalwa was your father. Yes, he was my big brother.
Mm.
And he was like a father to me and the rest of the family.
Okay.
Yes.
You come from a polygamous family?
Your yes, dad, yes. My father had five wives.
Oh, okay.
And we have a whole football team of boys and a whole netball team of girls. Mm. We are a big family. We're about 22.
Damn.
We lost a number.
So
no, he was a strong man.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So far, I have one wife.
Mm.
I've been trying to get a second one with a lot of
resistance.
But he managed very comfortably the five of them, and he loved them equally.
Okay.
And in the Muslim faith, they say you can have four, but on condition you're able to love them equally and to take care of them equally.
Mm.
So polygamy in the African setup is quite a normal thing, quite acceptable. Mm. And that is why the story of a young man out there who claims to be my son cannot be a scandal. It is the African way we take care of our children.
Mm.
And I will, thank you, deal with it.
But the Wamalwa gene is very strong because you and your brother look alike. Does your son?
Not that's your Kijana. I think there's quite some resemblance in the family.
Yeah.
But there are particularly two brothers of mine who look more like Mike than most of us.
Mm.
One of them is called Cassius Wamalwa and Robert Wamalwa. They're the ones who really look alike and look like him.
Oh, Cassius, like named after Muhammad Ali?
Cassius Clay.
Okay.
He was born in 1970 during the... Muhammad Ali days.
Mm.
So it's called Cassius Clay.
Okay. Mm. And Kijana, you're talking about Kijana coming back. He was in Britain or where was he?
Yes. He had gone to the UK for his father's studies.
Okay.
He became a lawyer and a barrister of the Lincoln's Inn.
Mm.
Then he came to the university here, the University of Nairobi, as a lecturer.
Mm.
Before 1974 now. Going into politics.
Okay.
And after our father, he went on with politics.
Mm.
For my case, I was just a very simple lawyer, practicing law when my brother died.
Oh, okay.
And that was in 2003 when he was vice president.
Mm.
After his death, I was blessed to take up the mantle, both by the family and the community.
Okay.
And that's how I came in.
Yeah.
But the intrigues of politics were such that I could not win that by-election.
Yes.
Because I thought my brother's friends were my friends. But in politics, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, okay.
If you're seen as a threat, because your Wamalwa name was quite big and very popular, some looked at it as another Wamalwa coming in now would be a threat to them. So I was blocked.
Okay.
I didn't win that by-election, but in 2007, I came back and won now as the Member of Parliament for Saboti. So after the 2008, we went on and I was later appointed Minister for Justice.
Yeah.
This was in 2012. So I was in there for about a year before the elections.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, so in 2007, you ran with which party?
2007 we had the Party of National Unity.
Oh, you under PNU?
Yes, PNU. That's how I was elected.
Okay, okay. Yes. How were you able to pull that? Because the Luhya vote has always been very Baba.
Yes. That time we had parties coming together. We had Ford Kenya, which was a party from our region. We had Kibaki's DP.
Yeah.
We had the other parties coming together under the Party of National Unity.
Yes.
And that's how we won the election and formed the government of National Unity much later.
Oh.
Yes, you remember what happened?
Yes, yes.
After the post-election violence, then we had the National Accord and we had the Grand Coalition government. So I served in that as MP for Saboti. Then I served as Minister for Justice in 2012.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. So you're saying you went from the Party of National Unity to the Government of National Unity?
The Grand Coalition Government.
Yeah, the Grand Coalition Government. Correct. And then have you ever heard, there are people who say that it's maybe, normally it's Wetangula, that Wetangula and Kalonzo were the ones who are used to like justify a rigged election. That means that now I'd put you there also. Like, because from the numbers, it was clear that Kibaki was losing. Then we went to sleep. Then we woke up. We were like, wait, 1 million disappeared into thin air. Tharaka Nithi all of a sudden had the most registered voters ever in Kenya. So what would you say about that in hindsight?
This happened, in hindsight, there has been that a rumor that Raila won that election, but Kibaki denied him victory.
Yeah,
but I think that is water under the bridge. The Grand Coalition government,
yes,
I think resolved the issue at the time, and we had Anusu Mukate government that was really broad-based, unlike what we have now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, then that Grand Coalition brought everybody on board in a Nusu Mukate arrangement. What we have now is not a broad-based government.
Yeah.
It is really a government that has been born out of cannibalization of the opposition. You remember when we went into, after the elections, Azimio had actually won this election. If you look at the number of parliamentary seats, Azimio won the majority. We had about 175, Kenya Kwanza had about 165 or so. And when you look at the counties, Azimio had the majority counties again. And when you look at the wards, then the regions. Azimio had actually won the majority regions. The western region was blue all the way to the coast, all the way to northeastern, all the way to Nyanza, to Nairobi. So really, in the old eight provinces, Kenya Kwanza won only two. That is Rift Valley and Central.
Yes.
So it shows you the picture of Kenya was entirely blue with a little yellow hapo katikati. But he had to now immediately start cannibalizing the opposition. He started by moving the UDM party with almost eight members of parliament. Then he cannibalized Jubilee, took away almost 26 members of parliament. Yeah, they crossed over. Then he cannibalized ODM. He took about eight members of parliament. You remember?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what has happened now is the continuation of the cannibalization of the opposition. He has just cannibalized ODM further by taking out a bigger bite of ODM from the opposition. And this time he went for the top leadership. give it to him. I think he's quite a smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
He took Baba to AU.
Yes.
The leader of ODM.
Yeah.
His two deputies, Oparanya, to cabinet. Joho, the second deputy, to cabinet. Mm. Then the national chairman of ODM, Mbadi. Then he went for the leader of opposition. Under this constitution,
yes,
the actual leader of opposition is Opiyo
Wandayi. Okay.
So he's literally swallowed the entire ODM top leadership and completed the cannibalization process that he started to weaken the opposition. So it's not really a grand coalition government like Kibaki is. It's not a government of national unity. It is a cannibalization of the opposition.
GTA.
Yes. So that's what has happened. And that's why most of us who are in the opposition are opposed to this so-called grand government of national unity.
Yeah.
It has not created national unity. It has only poached from to weaken the opposition, to stabilize a failed regime that the GNCs had actually were taking home. I mean, Zakayo alikuwa ameshuka.
Yeah,
wameanguka na finance bill 2023, wameanguka na finance bill 2024. So walikuwa wameanguka kuanguka naye, wakuwa mbaki kuanguka naye tu Zakayo mwenyewe.
Yeah,
alafu ndugu zetu wa ODM wamemshikilia. But for how long? Nane Nane is coming.
Yeah.
Time will tell.
With Nane Nane, what do you expect to happen with Nane Nane? Because personally, from I think that the government has used so much violence that the protest will never be the same. I feel like, because on the 25th, for example, the amount of violence was still a lot, but then after, too many people have been killed. So, Nane Nane, do you still feel like Kenyans still have that courage to come out and be like, enough is enough?
I think more Africa, one thing I want to tell Kenyans, particularly the Gen Z. In this country, we have demonized Maandamano. We have almost criminalized Maandamano.
Yes.
But we must remember that it's through Maandamano when our forefathers went to the forest, wakaandamana against the colonialists. That's how the colonialists left this country. Through Maandamano, people came out. They protested. They fought. They were willing to die. That's how we got our first liberation. When you look at the second liberation, it came through Maandamano. How we got this constitution, how Section 2A was removed, it was through Maandamano. People, Sabasaba, people in Nukamkunji, people died here in Nairobi. And it's through pressure that we got the second liberation. It's through Maandamano that we got the current constitution that we're enjoying. And it's through Maandamano, you remember last year, when we came out as Azimio, we came, we fought. 75 people were killed because of the finance bill 2023. We said no to an oppressive regime and an oppressive legislation. We fought it on the streets. We fought it in parliament. And we had 88 members of Azimio saying no to finance bill 2023. We had 176 saying yes from the Kenya Council. So that's how it passed.
Yes.
After the streets, after parliament, we went to court. Last week, we were vindicated by the Court of Appeal declaration of the Finance Bill 2023 being unconstitutional. It's out of pressure. It's out of the Maandamano that we got this bad law struck down. It's out of the Maandamano by the Gen Zs, the pressure they brought, that Zakayo dropped his finance bill 2024, that he dissolved his cabinet. But unfortunately, we have a situation where the Gen Zs went hunting. They actually walikuwa wamesukuma hii swara karibu washike. Then sisi wazee tunachukua swara na tunagawana. Not a single Gen Z is in this cabinet. Not a single Gen Z.
Yes.
So why did we dissolve the cabinet? Just to recycle the same old folks, some of whom had scandals. When you look at the G2G oil scandal, the minister responsible was given an even bigger docket. Then we are talking about fighting corruption. This is impunity.
Yeah.
Then we now get assistance. You know, I listened to Baba saying in Kibra, these fellows came saying these Gen Zs are military pressure, sana. They are finishing as our government is almost collapsing. Please assist us. They're on their knees. Then Baba assisted them. I said, with some experts. The question is, this regime was killing our young children, the Gen Zs. Should we have assisted our children, or should we have assisted those who are killing them? This country needs rescuing from Ruto. So it should not be us rescuing Ruto. We should be rescuing Kenya from Ruto and this failed regime.
Yeah.
This is where we are getting to a point and we are saying, as Azimio, we find this untenable. Martha Karua has left Azimio. Peter Munya has said he's going to leave. Maybe tomorrow Amala will leave or others will leave. But that is not the we need to do some soul searching to ask ourselves whether we are doing the right thing. Shouldn't we have sided with the young liberators, the liberation movement that has actually achieved more than we achieved last year? Or should we side with the oppressor? I think this is the question. These are some of the issues we are saying. We're getting to a point where we're saying, as a matter of principle, we have to take sides. Either in Kenya, there are only two sides in Kenya today.
Yeah.
You are either with the Gen Zs, the millennials, the majority of Kenyans who are saying Ruto must go, or you are with Zakayo, who is and now you are saying you are assisting him to ensure that Ruto must stay. Those two can't go together. You know to try to be on both sides is like you know the English have a saying. It's like running with a hare and hunting with hounds. You cannot.
Yeah,
you cannot. So as Eugene Wamalwa, my party DAPK, the Democratic Action Party of Kenya, and the majority of the parties in Azimio, we have said we will stand with the Gen Zs, we will stand with the millennials, we will stand with the majority of the people of Kenya who are saying enough is enough, Ruto must go. Those who want to assist Ruto and who are saying Ruto must stay, we wish them well. Thank you.
Okay, because we were saying that ODM said Ruto is not going anywhere. So
oh, he's not going.
Yeah, he's not going.
Oh my goodness, that's a new one. because the Gen Zs had said Ruto is going.
Yes, yes.
He was halfway to Sugoi, by the way. Inaonekana amesaidiwa barabarani arudi.
Yeah.
Lakini I saw one, I don't know if you saw this thing. Was it Eric Omondi ama nani? Alikuwa ameweka hii kipindi ya Zakayo. Zakayo alikuwa anashuka, akashuka karibu mguu ifike chini, akapanda tena. Then akakatalia juu ya mti. You know what they did? Wakaanza kukata mti. Then Zakayo and all those who are mti, on top, including his friends, wale wamepanda kumshikilia, a day is coming. Wakenya watakata hiyo mti na wote umepanda mti kusaidia Zakayo mtaanguka naye. That is coming.
Okay. Thank you. And then there's this thing of when you talked about the court order, it brought up another story or another issue that's come up. And when the Gen Zs on the streets, they used to say tukishamalizana Ruto tunakujia Kamwana. Kamwana meaning Uhuru.
Yes.
And the whole reason behind that was Uhuru to many Kenyans has gone down as the person who made court orders become useless. Like he used to disregard them. And it reached a level where even some of you as cabinet secretaries never cared. Like Matiang'i was also there. Like court order ikitolewa isitolewa, the executive does what it wants to do. So having worked in that government, what would you say about that?
I can't say you are wrong because it is true that we didn't get everything right when we were in government. But two wrongs don't make a right. And I know that we did, in some instances, you know, ignore court orders. But that is the impunity we must all fight against. As a lawyer and also having been a lawmaker, I say that our fidelity should be to the law, and we must respect court orders. Even as we speak, the courts have said police should not use tear gas.
Mm.
Police should not use live bullets. We have a court order served on the Inspector General of Police. But that order, since it was made, I think it was in June, it's not being respected. Police are still using excessive force. They're still using live bullets. They're still killing young Kenyans. And they're even using chemicals. These are issues that we must say no to. This is impunity. If we claim to be a country that's under the rule of law, we must respect the law. We must respect our constitution and embrace constitutionalism. I know that we have become a country that's under the rule of lies, because we have a system that keeps lying and lying. We might be a country under the rule of lies, but we cannot afford to be a country that's not under the rule of law. To that extent, we are courting disaster. We must respect court orders, and we must uphold the rule of law. If we were to do that, we would definitely respect the constitutional rights of Kenyans, especially under Article 37. And the young people who are coming out to demonstrate on the 8th, I want to encourage them that it is their right. And freedom, you know, liberty is never given. It must be fought for. We know that they have paid the ultimate price, because we're talking about over about 60 who have been killed this year. I've been to some of the funerals. It's been very, very traumatizing. I went to Machakos to bury Rex. Rex Masai. I've never seen such an emotional funeral. The pain of the parents. I later on went to Kimilili to bury a very young guy, Willie Sitati. Willie was the great grandson of the legendary Elijah Masinde. Remember the prophet, freedom fighter Elijah Masinde? And he was shot right just in the streets, very close to us here, streets of Nairobi. He was just 23. We went and buried him in Kimilili. The same day, we went to Bumula in Bungoma. To bury a very young guy. This was a student in Bungoma town. He was coming from school when the riots, demos were going on in Bungoma town. And he was a Form 2 student, and he was running with the crowd. And he was shot from the back by the police, a Form 2 student. So you can see the age of all those who have been killed. Very young people. They were not a threat to the police. They only had water and a phone. How can this be a threat to a police officer who is armed with an AK-47 rifle, a G3 rifle? And you shoot them. Many of them were shot running away. Not confronting, running away. They were mostly shot from the back. They were shot in the head. It is something that cannot be accepted in our country. And someone has to be held responsible. And that person is William Samoei Ruto. He cannot pass the buck. The blood of these innocent Kenyans is on his hands. So whether or not, as Kenyans of clear conscience, we want to go and eat with a person who has blood on his hands, traditionally you cannot. Where I come from, you cannot do that. So, but we leave it to the conscience of our colleagues who have chosen to assist him. But when more of our young people are killed, come nani nani, they shall be deemed to have aided and abetted those killings. They will be painted with the same brush as William Ruto, whom they have chosen to assist when other Kenyans are resisting. Their own children, their own grandchildren are resisting Ruto. They're saying Ruto must go, and you're there assisting them. How can you then still call yourself an opposition when you are assisting the government you should be opposing, when you have abandoned the people and taken the side of the oppressor? But that we leave it to their conscience.
So I think there was an article on Sunday. The article said City Mortuary receives 247 bodies, 87 above average in the month of protest. So it seems that the killings were more than 60. Because I think a few weeks ago they were saying there were 50 unidentified bodies. At City Mortuary, and then that we've already accounted for the 60. So this 50 must have had something to do with the protest. But now this would still come to, there was a time there was a debate, and the debate was online, or there was an issue, and the issue was, why are we painting Ruto as the guy who brought this level of impunity, while also during the Uhuru regime, for example, there were a lot of killings still. Because remember, that's when Baby Pendo happened. And remember, you were part of that regime. So yes, there are people at that point who are saying, "Yeah, hey, that regime is bloodthirsty, is what?" So do you feel like there's a, having worked in that regime, there's a difference with this other one? It's both blood for blood.
It is, what I'm saying is that impunity remains impunity, and okay, we cannot justify it.
Mm.
And those who bear the greatest responsibility must be held to account. That is all we are saying. And I think that's why the Gen Zs are fighting for.
Yeah.
When we had the killings in 2007, 2008, the IG of police was taking the ICC together with the top politicians who were implicated then.
Mm.
So we are saying, even this time, the IG of police has been forced to resign, but that is not enough. He must be held accountable. Mm. He must be taken to court. He should be prosecuted. And we have said that should be done nationally and internationally. Because some of the things that have been done in the last 60 days amount to crimes against humanity. They are matters that should be prosecuted at the International Criminal Court. And we are saying we're going to pursue these matters. So it's not something we should just say because Kome amekoma kwa Inspector General wa Police, mambo yamekwisha, hapana. They must be held accountable, including his minister. In fact, to me, the recycling of the ministers was quite shocking. The fact that Ruto could return, the same minister who was there during these killings, and the IG has gone and returned to the same ministry. To me, that was really showing Kenyans the middle finger that shouldn't be allowed. It's good that at least the defense, yes, was dropped and moved. But the one of internal security should equally have been moved, because in future, they are likely to face charges.
Yeah.
They must be held accountable together with IG or police for the innocent blood that was shed, and William Ruto himself must take responsibility for that. I think that is one thing that we must acknowledge. He did the right thing to move C.S. Duale. But the other thing he needs to do is to return the military back to the barracks. You cannot deploy the military against your own citizens and do so generally across the country and indefinitely. You cannot do that, because that by itself is abusing those powers that you have to intimidate the citizens.
Yes,
we know that he wants to use it as a deterrence, so that anyone thinking of coming out on the 8th, they are afraid that the military will be coming for them. So we cannot live under fear as a nation, where our constitution has guaranteed our rights to come out to protest. Then we have the military, a deployment order by the military, an indefinite order, hanging over the heads of Kenyans like the sword of Damocles. That cannot happen in a democracy.
How does this happen? Who deploys the military? Is it the Minister of Defense? Because you've been a Minister of Defense.
Yes.
Or is it the President? Like, if yeah, the army, where is the call coming from? Is it coming from Duale or Maruto? Because we always assume, yes, you're the Minister of Defense, but you have no control over the military, because the military is, the President is the Chief of Defense Forces. So who deployed the military? Was it Duale or Ruto?
No, Duale, the minister, is just a facilitator.
Mm.
But of course, we have the council that would sit and make that decision, and Parliament has to approve. And under Article 241, I think what we are saying is that there are situations, exceptional circumstances, where the military can come in to assist. In times of emergencies, the military can come in to assist. And in times where the police are overwhelmed, the military can come in to restore order. But in this case, can you say the police of Kenya have been overwhelmed.
No.
Here we are sending 1,000 police officers over 12,000 kilometers away across the Atlantic to Haiti to assist the Haitians there.
Yes, yeah.
Is that the kind of police force you can say needs assistance? Because they themselves have gone to assist. They don't need any assistance. They have not been overwhelmed. Therefore, there can be no justification to have the military deployed against the citizens of Kenya indefinitely in the pretext of there having been a need for assistance from the military because the police are overwhelmed. The police are not, in fact, they are the police who have overwhelmed Kenyans with the levels of violence, excessive use of force. They are the ones who have overwhelmed Kenyans. And it's not them who have been overwhelmed. And this is something that we want to say yet again. Bwana Ruto, return the military to the barracks.
So it's
that Ruto. Deployment order should be cancelled, and we are still going to challenge it in court for it to be lifted because it is meant to intimidate. It's meant to send fear in Kenyans. Kenyans cannot live in fear. We are not in a military state. We are in a free, multi-party, democratic state where we should freely express ourselves without being threatened by the military or the police or anyone within our borders. The military's actually work is to fight our enemies, external enemies, Al-Shabaab. That is where their guns should be trained, not on our youth, not on our own citizens. Yes.
So that's what I'm asking. So according to it, Ruto who deployed?
Yes, he is.
It's not.
And I can tell you this. I think it was done out of panic at first. Then once they had they used parliament to cleanse their illegal activities, they have now used it as a weapon to threaten Kenyans. Because it's a blank check that they were given by the court. Because any time in any county today, Ruto can be allowed to deploy the military against you. We cannot do that in an open, free, democratic society. You cannot do that.
It's a panic attack.
Yes, so, it was out of a panic attack, but but now they're using it politically. You remember those days we used to hear that there were those red berets, they were called Fanya Fujo Uone. Sasa Saizi, now they are using the military as FFUs, you know, Fanya Fujo Uone. You can't do that in a democratic society. Yes.
So according to you, you feel at some point Kindiki has to be prosecuted?
I would say anyone who was responsible for the atrocities committed against Kenyans must be held accountable. And Kome, ingawa alikoma kwa IGO police, is not the only one. The whole chain from Bungei and all those who are responsible to Kome, to Kindiki, to Ruto himself, must be held accountable. And we cannot be the ones as the opposition being used to shield him or to sanitize those atrocities and the bloodshed that was shed in our country. We cannot do that. We should be the ones speaking for the people, fighting for justice for those families. And those, we should be the voice of those voiceless who can't speak for themselves.
Yes. Yeah, because the reason why I'm asking you that is because, as I said, during the protest, it was always, tukimalizana Ruto, tunaendea Kamwana. So ilikuwa pia tukimalizana Kindiki, tunaendea Matiangi. So do you feel if that was to happen and you are president and the youth come to you and tell you, you know what, we want Kindiki prosecuted, but apart from that, we want to go back to also Matiangi. Would you support that?
Why not? Because justice, we have a saying as lawyers that let justice be done even if the heavens fall. Let whoever was responsible be held to account, no matter who he was or no matter who he is now. Yes.
Okay. But then I don't know if I'd call him as your mentor. How would you classify Uhuru Kenyatta to you? Because there's been a lot of stories about Uhuru. Like, for example, you are his preferred running mate in 2013. So if we are going after Ruto, we have to go after Uhuru for the because there's a lot of blood that was also shed during Uhuru's time. So, first of all, was that true? Were you supposed to be Uhuru's running mate?
Yes, and when we were serving Kibaki's administration, we were very young. Actually, I was honored to become one of the youngest ministers for justice.
Yeah.
I was only 38 when Kibaki appointed me as his minister for justice and a first-term member of parliament for Saboti. And he gave me a huge task.
Yeah.
At the time, Mutula Kilonzo, who was a minister during the promulgation of the constitution, had handed over the constitution now to me for implementation, together with Charles Nyachai, the CIC chair, and AG Githu Muigai. We were quite a strong team, and we did our part. It's one thing that I feel greatly honored by Mzee Kibaki to have had the opportunity to serve my country at such a critical time to implement this very, very progressive constitution. During that period, we were going towards the elections. And as the young ministers in Kibaki's government, we felt a time had come when we needed a generational change in our leadership.
Okay.
And we got together with Uhuru Kenyatta. He was then Minister for Finance and Deputy Prime Minister. With Ruto, he was then Minister for Agriculture. Later on, he became Minister for Higher Education. I was Minister for Justice. We started a vuguvugu called G7 for generational change.
Oh, okay.
And we had said, basically, most of those who had led us from independence were actually the generation that, the pre-independence generation. So we wanted the Uhuru generation now to take over, those who were born after our independence. And we now came in and we put the wazees on notice that in the next general election, that was 2012, before it was changed to 2013, we wanted to take over leadership of the country. And Mzee Kibaki and wazee wenzake waende nyumbani.
So G7 had
myself, Uhuru and Ruto. Then we launched Uhuru's party. It was called TNA.
Yes, yes.
So at the TNA launch here at KICC, we launched our ticket with Uhuru as president. I was his running mate. And Ruto was to be the prime minister. That was what we had agreed. I was the leader of the New Ford Kenya party. Ruto was the leader of URP party, and Uhuru was the leader of TNA party. So that is how Jubilee was born. And later on, things changed. Mudavadi came in, and Ruto displaced me as running mate.
Mudavadi story? Because the Mudavadi story was Uhuru wanted to basically hand the presidency to Mudavadi and then change his mind last minute when he was...
Yes.
The Mount Kenya Mafia told him, forget about it. We need someone from the mountain at the top.
It was a very fluid situation because of the ICC cases. You remember, both Uhuru and Ruto had been charged alongside Muthaura and IG, Inspector of Police Ali. And Joshua. So at the time, there was uncertainty. And this is how now Mudavadi was persuaded to come and join us. And when he came in, that is how the displacement came about. And I was the youngest in the team. So I, as I said, fine. I wouldn't mind taking any other docket as minister and whatever. So Mudavadi came in. Then things started changing at ICC. It became clearer. There were some rulings here in court that even if you had a case still pending, the presumption of innocence until proven guilty still stands. And you're protected by the constitution. And when you go to the ICC also, the treaty that we had signed also respected that presumption of innocence. I think it was Article 50. So that is how now Uhuru and Ruto realized that they would still be cleared to run even if the ICC cases were pending.
So they were not sure?
At first, it was. You remember there were cases filed here, and you remember then Mutula Kilonzo was Minister for Justice, the late Mutula Kilonzo, and he had said as Minister for Justice, he cannot allow people accused of crimes against humanity to lead the same humanity.
Yeah.
So it was a very complex situation for my two brothers, and this is how Musalia came in as an alternative in case there was that complication. But later on, they were clear to run.
Mm.
And that's how Musalia now went on to also run as, he went under Amani Coalition, and we teamed together, and Ruto displaced me on Uhuru side, so he teamed up with Uhuru.
Mm.
But we later on came back to now reunite in 2015.
Okay.
When Uhuru appointed Minister for Water.
Mm.
So it was a long journey, and you would have been talking with the first deputy president.
Or president.
Or president. Or president. Because then the Uhuru succession would have been much smoother and without much turbulence as it happened.
Okay, so this is interesting. So it means that, what's his name? Musalia would have preferred them not to be cleared to run, because it would have meant a very easy path to the presidency.
No, he wouldn't have preferred. I mean, he came in as an alternative.
Mm.
It was like a plan B.
Mm.
But then when they were cleared to run, Musalia had already declared.
So what were they offering him as Musalia? Like when he was brought in, what was Uhuru offering?
No, he was there as a candidate in case Uhuru's candidature was blocked by the court. And you remember there were a lot of efforts, and including international forces, foreign pressure to block them from running. Remember there was a time even Hillary Clinton herself came here, a Secretary of State, and they had raised issues of concern about the democracy in Kenya if people were accused of crimes against humanity were allowed to run. So it was a very dicey situation. So Musalia was the fallback, was the plan B, but when they were cleared, they went on to run and to win. And I think they remained friends with Musalia even after that.
Mm.
Yes.
And we'll come back to Uhuru, but what do you feel about the memes? Have you seen the memes surrounding Musalia and Wetangula, where they are called Tom and Jerry?
Yes, yes, yes.
They are called
Wakishiba Hawasumbui.
Yes. So, and I feel like that stereotype has followed like Luya politicians. What do you feel about that? Like the fact they're never taken seriously, people take them as,
yes,
they stand for nothing. They're basically, as long as they have something on their table, they're okay.
I think it's more to do with their history. You remember during the Nyayo era, the two of them were really collaborators with the Nyayo era.
Even Wetangula?
Yes, Wetangula was Moi's lawyer.
Yeah.
Then later on, he nominated him to parliament. So really, they were raised by Moi.
Mm.
So in terms of the struggle, they were never part of the struggle. When Masinde Muliro, Wamalwa Kijana, Namuhisa Kitui, all those who came from our region were fighting in the Second Liberation, they were never part of it. They were very comfortable, like being in the house of Pharaoh. They were very, very comfortable. They were taken care of. And walisema wakati huo wakiwa na Moi wakishiba, hawasumbui. Then now coming to the second regime now of Ruto. They were together with Ruto, you know. They were all raised, mentored by Moi.
Mm.
So you see some kind of regrouping.
Mm.
And they are in the system now. Again, they are the ones now sustaining the Ruto presidency.
Yeah.
And as we speak already, they are talking of supporting Ruto until 2032.
Mm.
When majority of Kenyans, the Gen Zs, the millennials, are saying Ruto must go, them, again, Wakishiba Hawasumbui, they are very comfortable with the Ruto until 2032, when many Kenyans want Ruto to go like yesterday.
Mm.
So it is maybe to do with their brand of politics, I think it is born out of that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, but the Japanese wakishiba asungui. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. And then so back to Uhuru. The story is Uhuru started fighting with Ruto back in the year 2015. How true is that? And when, as soon as they started seeing these big differences, he still wanted you to be now the running mate for 2017. Is there any truth to that, Ama? It's just they fought at the end.
I think, no, they said much earlier. You remember after they named the first cabinet, Uhuru had wanted to include me in that cabinet. Ruto was opposed.
Mm.
And I stayed out for 2 years.
Why was Ruto opposed?
Well, we had, our own issues.
Mm.
And he blocked my appointment.
Mm.
Even July, when I was appointed in 2015 to the Ministry of Water, they had to hive off part of the Ministry of Agriculture, take away the irrigation department, and then merge it with water to create the Ministry of Water and Irrigation.
Mm.
Ruto was very opposed because, the agriculture docket was his.
Mm.
And you remember during the time there had been a scandal, the Galana Kulalu irrigation scheme scandal. It was a $14 billion project that was supposed to transform Kenya into a food secure nation through irrigation.
Mm.
But whatever had been done really disappointed Uhuru. I think he launched it in 2014. So by 2015, things had fallen apart. And Uhuru now cracked down on corruption because corruption had really set in.
Okay.
He actually kicked out five or six ministers at the time. And amongst those was the current head of public service, Felix Koskei. He was then the first minister then for agriculture.
Mm.
And because of that Galana scandal, he was kicked out.
Okay.
So that, actually, you are right in a way that tension started building from
2015
at the time of that crackdown on corruption. Uhuru went and addressed parliament. A lot of he lost a lot of friends, and their relations became a bit strained at the time.
Mm.
When I went to the Ministry of Water and Irrigation at the time, of course, a lot of people, those who are been trying to say, why is this Wamala not arrested? Why is he without any scandal? They try to say, what about Galana Kulalu scandal? When I came in, I was the mortician, really.
Mm.
The project had failed.
Mm.
So Uhuru brought me in to clean up. And we were able to actually cut down that project from $14 billion to $7 billion and to, the English say, put Humpty Dumpty back on the wall because it had collapsed.
Mm.
So we had to come up with a new proposal, present it to Parliament, and with the Committee of Agriculture, we're able to get it back on track.
Mm.
So that's how we came in 2015. Okay. But during that term, we were able to work very well, continue working and delivering. When it came to now, as we went into the 2017 election, after winning it, our brothers now, led by Ruto, started campaigning the next year, 2018. Immediately, cabinet was formed. They started campaigning. They started what was called Tanga Tanga.
Yes, Tanga Tanga.
And then President Uhuru told them, no, let's stop hii mambo ya kutanga tanga, let us work. Then they said, sisi watu wa kutanga tanga. That's how Tanga Tanga was born.
Yeah.
And the fight went on until later, the handshake happened and so on and so forth.
Mm. So going back to this, it's Galana Kulalu.
Yes.
$14 billion. So what happens? What was Uhuru's vision and what was messed up that made him so angry that he had to change everything? What was his vision? What did he want to achieve?
His vision was we need to create new bread baskets for Kenya. The population is growing. The land is not expanding.
Mm.
So how are we going to feed these Kenyans? We need more arable land to be brought under irrigation. Trans Nzoia, where I come from, we are the traditional breadbasket of Kenya. But when you look at the farms now, as the Wazirs are dying, their sons are subdividing, and most of these lands are no longer economically viable, agriculturally.
Mm.
So we are going to face a problem. When we used to produce maybe 30 or 35 million bags of maize, we are no longer able to do that. Yet the demand is growing, so we have to keep importing. So we must look for new lands where we can now create new bread baskets. And that area between Kilifi County and Tana River, we have about 1 million acres. All we need there is water, we need infrastructure, and we can bring over 500,000 acres under irrigation. In future, with more development, we can increase to 1 million acres. If you are able to do that, then it will ease pressure on the traditional bread baskets. We have other areas like Ukambani. If you've been to Ukambani during the dry season, when there's famine, Ukambani, the place is terrible. There's no food. You have to take relief food. But go to Ukambani when it has rained. It's so green and beautiful. You go to their markets, they are bustling with food. And so what does Ukambani? They have the land. All they need is water. And the second plan we had was to do the Thwake Dam. Now, Thwake Dam is the biggest dam we have in Kenya. And that was that's apart from the, you know, a lot of people ask me, oh, you're a minister, what are your achievements? You know, Thwake, apart from the implementation of the Constitution of Kenya, to me, another biggest achievement during my tenure at Ministry of Water is the Thwake Dam. This was a plan that was stuck for almost 10 years. When I was in the ministry, I was able to get this off the ground. And as we speak, Thwake Dam is almost 90% complete. When that dam is complete, we are going to turn the entire Ukambani region into another breadbasket of Kenya. You are talking of Makueni County, Kitui, and that covers all the way up to Machakos County. Konza City will get water from that dam. Then we'll have over 100,000 acres initially under irrigation. So you will no longer in future take molio, that is relief food, to Ukambani. In fact, Ukambani will now be exporting food to the other counties. So Galana project, what we did, we were able to use the little space we had been given just to prove that indeed in this land you can be able to produce maize and get higher yields than even Trans Nzoia, the traditional bread basket, and get new breeds that can actually mature faster, yield more. And that, as far as I'm concerned, Galana succeeded because what we succeeded was the proof of concept. That is the primary objective. We were able to prove that you can actually produce not 20 bags of maize like we do in Kitale. You can actually produce almost double that, between 30 to 40 bags. That land there, that was just a bush, we had wild animals roaming, is a new bread basket. All we need is to put the infrastructure in place, and we had said we must, as government, hand over this to private sector. Because it's not the business of government to do business. This is where we get it wrong. So when I left the ministry, that proof of concept had been achieved. What needed now was for the remaining institutions to facilitate private sector to come on board. And this is one way of contributing towards our national food security.
So when is Ruto launching Thwake Dam?
I think Thwake is almost done. We are really hoping before end of this year, Thwake Dam should be launched.
You know, he launched it as a Kenya Kwanza achievement.
Yes, but you know, the last 2 years, you know, we're in August, we're starting the third year.
Yeah,
I can tell you today, because I know all the projects he has launched, they're all Uhuru's projects. You cannot say Ruto has started any project that you can say, hii ni ya Kenya Kwanza, ama hii ni ya UDA. Mm-mm. I was in Kiambu the other day, and I was telling them, here, as Minister for Water, we came and did Theta Dam. Theta Dam is serving the people of Kiambu. We did Karimeno Dam. This is our Uhuru's project. We went to Kirinyaga and did Thiba Dam. And that dam actually is going to double rice production, you know, in Mwea.
Those ones are complete?
Yes, Thiba Dam is complete. Okay. It's working. And we did Loanzoya in Western. And once that is complete, this flooding you've been seeing in Budalangi will end. Oh. Then we'll be able to double rice production in Bunyala irrigation. Mm. We are a country that does not have to import rice, by the way, from Pakistan or where. We can actually be sufficient in terms of rice. If we do irrigation also for our sugar cane, we don't have to import sugar and even maize. So I'm proud that I served a government that delivered. Yeah. If you are to look at the 10 years of Uhuru, we were able to achieve more than any other administration. In fact, the previous administrations combined in terms of infrastructure, over 10,000 kilometers of road, in terms of people connected to power, in terms of laying the first kilometer of railway. You know, since the Indian coolies 100 years ago, no single kilometer of railway had been built in Kenya. I know people can argue about, oh, it was overpriced, but you can see that in the years of Uhuru Kenyatta, over 600 kilometers of railway were built.
Yeah.
And we have a train. Now what we need is just to connect this to Kisumu, connect it to Malaba, connect it to Kampala, all the way to Rwanda. Then we'll open up the region. This was done during the administration that I served, and I'm proud to have served under Uhuru Kenyatta. I can also say that when you're looking at the education sector, Kibaki did, you know, the free primary education thing. But under Uhuru, Kenya became one of the first or few African nations to actually achieve 100% transition to secondary. Many Kenyans might not realize the achievements of Uhuru Kenyatta, but those who served with him know that you might call him names, but Uhuru delivered. We are starting the third year of William Ruto. I don't know if you know of anything that you can actually write home about.
Talk it down. Because I'm sure he's going to launch it just before the elections.
Yeah.
He's going to launch that. And you said the Budalangi one is called what?
Loanzoya.
Because he's also going to launch that.
Yes,
you know.
I can tell you we also fell short.
Yeah.
One thing we did complete, we had a dam in Nyanza, Koin Soru Dam. That dam had already been designed by the colonialists over 50 years ago. All the flooding you see in Nyando, all those flooding, what we need is just a dam to tame River Nyando. Then the Kano Plains, we can double rice production in Ahero, that Kano Plain, that whole area, stop the flooding and use the water for irrigation. All we need is that dam. But there was a lot of politics there that we didn't complete. Okay. We fell short, and future administrations should prioritize that dam. It will be a game changer for Kericho and Kisumu and the entire region as a whole.
I feel like the one thing that's not clear is when you talk about these dams, they are very good for Kenya. So how does Uhuru and Ruto fight over this? Like, what sort of corruption was happening, and why did he feel
it's corruption?
That it's Ruto? Because I remember there's this analogy that he used, that if you're driving with someone and you look behind, you see he's taken off the spare wheel. Yeah. You look behind, he's trying to grab the So it's like you're saying Ruto was cannibalizing budgets. So could you also say the same, that with the Galana thing, that Ruto's people were stealing?
I can say the biggest threat to our national development is really corruption. The biggest threat to devolution, which is working for a country, is corruption. And what has held us back as a country to realize our dream as Kenya is really corruption and tribalism. You know, these things that we do. Because at independence, we had power. You know, with Singapore, Korea, all these so-called Malaysia, you know, the Asian tigers. We had power. But we were slowed down by corruption. How they've dealt with corruption and issues of tribalism. if you look at most of the leaders out there, they were able to overcome them. But unless we overcome them, we shall be overcome as a nation. Mm. The dams, the biggest threat is really corruption. The deals that are made that interfere with the implementation of those dams. Look at, we have Itare Dam in Nakuru. Mm. That dam by itself should be able to serve 1 million people in Nakuru.
Mm.
But because of corruption, it got stuck. I believe that dam should be completed to serve. This thing you've heard about the famous dams in Elgeyo Marakwet.
That's Kimwarer.
Aror and Kimwarer.
Mm-hmm.
That Kerio Valley
yeah.
has huge potential as a breadbasket. With those dams, the food production in Kerio Valley, in fact, it's part of what can address the insecurity, you know, the security challenge we're facing there. If we're able to build those dams and now maximize on the production and productivity, you will see some of those bad tendencies going away once we're able to create wealth and instead of people engaging in cattle rustling, they will be very busy creating wealth. But corruption... And this is, it is one point where they fell out, the two friends.
Yeah.
Because the president gets intelligence reports. He knows who is doing what. And if they turn out to be cronies, very close people of your deputy, then when the scandal blows up, he's the one defending. You heard what he said? No, it was only 7 billion.
Yeah, it's the Kimwarer thing.
Yes, it was just 7 billion. We didn't lose much. Just if 7 billion is pocket change, 7 billion can build schools, can build roads. So the fallout was on the issues of corruption.
Yeah.
But still, we must be pragmatic enough to say Kenya is growing very fast in terms of population. If we are going to be prevented from realizing our development goals nationally, then we will remain behind. There's no way we are going to lift millions of Kenyans out of poverty. We must overcome. It's like the example I gave during the devolution conference in Kirinyaga. If the lion eaters of the Savo scared us from building that railway, the railway would never have been built because lions started attacking people, eating the workers. But we said we must deal with the man-eaters of Savo. And we dealt with them. And the railway was built. Likewise, we said we must, the way we dealt with man-eaters of Savo, we must deal with the dam-eaters of Kenya. We must deal with the corrupt people. But we must build these dams. For us to realize national food security, we must go to irrigation. We must harvest and store this water and produce food for the many Kenyans who are being born daily. That is one challenge. If I'm granted the opportunity to lead this country, that is one area I would focus on. As Minister for Water, we mapped out this country. We know which dam needs to be built where. All we need are leaders of integrity who would do not for themselves, lining up their pockets, but do for Kenyans what must be done. Remove Kenya from the shameful list of food insecure nations of the world. And that is what we need to do through irrigation.
How much was lost through Kimwarer? Because I've had conflicting figures.